My name is Patrick Delaney. I'm the Communications Director for the American Soybean Association. Today you're going to hear from Ray Gasser, our President, Danny Murphy, our Chairman, and Wade Cowan, our first Vice President. We also have, if you have questions about ASA operational things or internal stuff, we will also have our CEO, Steve Senske, available in the hallway afterwards. And so we can go ahead and bring Ray up, and we'll get started.
Well, thanks, Patrick, and welcome, everybody. And we really thank you for being here, and thank you for supporting the soybean industry, but also all of agriculture. You know, your efforts to help us tell our story really makes a difference for me and our farm and us in our industry. So we really thank you for that. As Patrick said, my name is Ray Gasser. My family and I grow soybeans and corn in southwest Iowa near Corning. And we're really happy that our son, Chris, is farming with us, and that next generation is going to be in place on our farm, and we see a long future for not only us, but for the people that we are able to work with. So Danny and Wade will be talking a little bit, and as Patrick said, we'd like to take questions at the end. So I'll just begin, with some of the things about the Commodity Classic. We've already set records. You know, last year was a record year, and we're already breaking those like crazy. You know, we've got over 7,000 people registered here at the Classic, and more registering as we speak today. So we beat the record last year was 6,200, and we're at plus 7,000 already. So we have more total attendance. We have more first-time attendees. We have more number of growers. We have more exhibiting companies, and we have more booth space. So it's just a record all the way around, and it's got to be an exciting time for us, and it's such a great opportunity for me to be part of this and to be president of the American Soybean Association at a time that's really a lot going on in agriculture, and where there was a lot of issues that we worked on in the past and that we need to work on in the future, but the Farm Bill was a big thing, and after three long years, we're really happy to say it passed. It was a compromise bill, and the final product strengthens risk management, streamlines conservation programs, reinforces the safety net, and invests in key programs in the areas of trade promotion, research, and renewables. One of the biggest wins for ASA is that the law ensures that planting decisions remain separated and decoupled from income safety net programs. This has been our priority from day one, and it helps to ensure that farmers plant for the market and not for government programs. We worked really hard to avoid programs that would have potentially distorted farmers' planting decisions and put us at risk of potential WTO challenges. So this is my part of the story about the Farm Bill. You know, if you have specific questions, we'd like to take it at the end. And I'm going to hand it over to Danny and let him talk about biodiesel and transportation.
Thank you, Ray. And I want to also echo Ray's comments of thanking you for being here this afternoon, and thank you for the support that you've given me over in my past year as president and helping relay our message. It's important for American Soybean Association to work with y'all and to be able to get our message out and make sure that we're able to do our job of helping U.S. soybean farmers. My name is Danny Murphy, and I raise soybeans, corn, and wheat on my farm at Canton, Mississippi. I'm also ASA's chairman this year, and I'm going to talk briefly about start with biodiesel. You've all seen the back and forth about the EPA and what their proposed regulations on the renewable fuel standard, and we're concerned about the levels, about the volume levels that they have proposed. We've asked our soybean farmers to make comments, and we've had hundreds of farmers express their concern to EPA about the proposed levels and what it would do to the capability and the potential of the biodiesel industry. And these proposed regulations would reduce the production over the next year or two and would really stifle the growth in a really valuable market for soybean farmers. Reports out of the EPA indicate that the agency has heard our concerns, but it remains to be seen whether or not the final levels will be adjusted in such a way that satisfies the biodiesel industry and the soybean industry. We're also invested in seeing the biodiesel tax credit is extended. As you know, it's currently expired, and if it is extended, it would more than likely be as part of a tax extenders package. But we also support the standalone legislation that's been proposed by Senators Grassley of Iowa and Cantwell of Washington. On transportation, we're very close to a big win for soybean farmers. Both the House and the Senate passed their individual waterways infrastructure bills in impressive bipartisan fashion, and those bills are now in conference. We continue to urge conferees to approve a final bill that invests in our waterways by ensuring several things. First, we want to make sure that the funds that are for port maintenance and dredging are used for those purposes. Second, the funds that are made available for maintenance of locks, that more funds are made available for the maintenance of locks and dams. And finally, that the project process for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is streamlined. Again, reports suggest that we're close, but as we learned in the Farm Bill, legislation is not always an easy process, so it's something we'll continue to watch very closely. In addition to the inland waterways, we're pushing for policies that benefit soybean farmers on roads and rails and ports, too, as each of those are key components for getting our products to market. The infrastructure is critical for the U.S. soybean industry, the U.S. ag industry, and also for the general U.S. economy. So that's a big issue for us as we move forward to make sure that we're able to improve those locks and dams and ports so that we will continue to have the benefits and have the and be competitive in a world market. At this point, I'll bring Wade up to talk about trade and biotechnology.
Keep moving up the mic. Good afternoon. I'm Wade Kahn, and I have the privilege this year of serving as First Vice President of the American Soybean Association. I live 400 miles northwest of here in Brownfield, Texas, and as a first Texan you've probably met at any media event this weekend, I am proud to welcome you to Texas. As most of you know, it means friendly, and you will find that everybody's friendly here, and they sure love you money. So as we move forward through the week, you will find out that that we will become more friendlier as Texans. I actually grow guar, cotton, peanuts, beans, and grain sorghum. And between the three of us, I'm proud to say that the officers of American Soybean Association represent every commodity that is grown here at Commodity Classic. And that's a big thing because we all have to work together in agriculture going forward. Today I'll touch on two things, that's trade and biotechnology. It's an exciting time for trade in soybeans. Soybeans are the largest agricultural trade source that we have now in the U.S. We ship out many of our beans, one-fourth of them, into the Asian market and export over half of them. Since there are two big agreements, as you all know, on the horizon, TTIP and TPP, and we look forward to those agreements with our neighbors in Europe and the Pacific Rim. But there are some problems with both of these agreements. The Pacific Partnership is a big deal because with the 12 countries that are represented in that agreement, it's $27 trillion in GDP. It's the fastest growing markets in the world and will be most of the population of the world by 2050. The only problem we have with that agreement right now is the inclusion of Japan and their demands that their agricultural commodities have exemptions. We cannot allow this in our trade agreements anymore because if you allow any country to have special treatment for its own trade and its own agricultural inputs, it puts every new agreement that we have and even the old ones at risk. Europe, we're excited that we're developing trade negotiations with them and that those trade negotiations are moving forward, but we still have the problem, the same old problem, with biotech approvals. If we can move forward in this agreement and remedy biotech approvals and get Europe to use sound scientific principles to move those approvals forward effectively, then we will be able to to further expand our export markets to the European Union. And that's a good segue into biotech. Biotech plays a crucial role in soybean farming, as it does with many of the commodities represented here. We're working closely with USDA to address the delays that are becoming more and more prevalent, not only in the U.S., but also in the European Union and in China. In the U.S., it's went from 18 months to a staggering 3 years, and now it has become a process that takes over 4 years in Europe and in China. In an effort to address these, last month we sent a biotech trade mission to Europe, and ASA met with members in four countries to try to move forward scientific biotech principles and scientific approval methods. Next month, we'll send President Gasser along with an international trade group that represents not only us but South American producers to China to help further those trade approvals and to ensure that we have a good, sound scientific basis there and that no political whims drive these markets. On the consumer side of biotech, I'm very proud and I'm very excited that biotech is not only moving from the farmer's perspective now into the consumer's perspective. The new Howell Lake oil beans that are being produced and looking for approvals not only here but overseas, once they are approved, will be a great advantage to consumers all over the U.S. and the world. It'll help deal with the partially hydrogenated oil and the trans fat issues, and will be a much healthier alternative for those who use vegetable oils all across the world. Just to make two other points here, we're actively involved with the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance to help get this message across, and we're also members of the Coalition for Safe and Affordable Foods, and we work with them to establish GMO policies that will ensure that trade between the states, trade in the United States, and that no commodity or no sector of the soybean industry gains an unfair advantage over another because of how they are labeled. And if you can see, we're very busy right now, and we'd sure be pleased to answer any questions that y'all might have. Thank you.
At this point, we'll open it up for questions. Dan, I saw your hand up.
Yeah, Dan, with Successful Farming Magazine. I guess the question would be for any of you, but are you concerned that the EPA or the RVO will hurt biodiesel even more than ethanol?
Well, certainly we're concerned about the level. We produce 1.8 billion gallons of biodiesel this year, and if the mandate is kept at 1.28 and along with a reduction in the volumetric level back to, I think, 2.25, that will, substantially reduce our market and maybe as down as far as in the 900,000 gallon range next year, and would be really be devastating for the biodiesel industry and reduce what's really a growing industry and has shown the ability that we have the inputs, we've got the oil, we've got the products to grow this market, and it's concerned. That's what we've relayed to EPA of how it'll affect our industry, and that we do have the raw materials, we do have the infrastructure in place, and we need to allow this industry to continue to grow.
Just to follow up, I don't think there's really any blank wall for biodiesel, right? How does EPA justify any biodiesel supply chain?
We don't know.
Larry Brown, High Plains Journal. Dan, nice to see you again.
Thanks.
What sort of, do you have any kind of, within the association, do you guys have any kind of recommendation to Congress? Who have you talked to about trying to seek some sort of relief on this kind of this kind of situation for yourself?
Well, we certainly, EPA had a comment period. We organized and asked soybean farmers to make comments, and hundreds of them did, and so we'll We've met with EPA, and we will meet again with them in a couple of weeks. And we've, as we've had the opportunity in Congress to talk to them, really concerned of where EPA is going with this. Congress had it pretty well laid out on the both ethanol and biodiesel. We've kept our comments, of course, just to biodiesel, but again, really concerned about about really trying. It's going to be a real reduction in our industry and a real loss for soybean farmers if it continues.
So to add to that, we've had several letters from our legislators, encouraging EPA to reconsider and to really bring up the renewable volume standards and those letters shared with the EPA the same message as Danny said, that we have the capacity and we have the feedstocks, and it's really good for not only America, but it's good for rural America, and it's an economy, and it creates jobs, all those kind of things that biodiesel really benefits everyone in the United States.
Sure. I'm here from Chris Bell. We're going to hear from Secretary Vilsack tomorrow. How concerned are you that when we have implementation of the Farm Bill, that we might have, for example, the crop insurance provisions not all ready to roll out at the same time as just not as we've got the provision? And really, growers are going to have to look at both sides of that equation before they decide on a 5-year plan.
Yeah. So, yeah. Those are really good questions, and we've been visiting with Krista Harden, in particular Deputy Secretary Harden, about those concerns, and they understand those, and they as they tell us, they're working diligently to get the rules and regulations implemented, and they understand that there are timelines and issues that farmers need to consider, and we're hoping for a process that will effectively let farmers make those decisions, and if not, we'll need to talk at the end and try to have some kind of a negotiation of implementing crop insurance and other things. So at this time, we're just hopeful that the rules and regulations get developed in time and that farmers can make a timely decision. There's lots of decisions to be made with the Farm Bill, and there is money in the Farm Bill to allow our universities, our land grants, to help farmers with those decision-making tools.
Jeff. Yeah. Did you evaluate what the Congress offered in the balance between shallow loss and target price? The two options that are available there, did they keep a policy that is an adequate safety net that keeps you from raising for a program instead of a market?
Yeah.
Boy, you're asking the wild guy on the panel, but I'm kind of pleased that the SCO was included. That actually originated out of my congressman's office in West Texas, and I think that he really feels that it will help, be a safety net. I am hopeful that it will be a safety net. A lot of this, like we all know, depends on implementation. My biggest hope is that they'll get it done, but I think that if they do not get the implementation done right, we'll have a really valuable ally in the financial industry, because my banker will throw a wild-eyed fit if there isn't a good safety net.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, in both your organization's delegate session this morning and the corn growers, people raised questions to Krista Harden about whether there would be adequate staffing at the FSA county offices. And she mentioned that USDA has about $1 billion less than money. Are you concerned that there will be kind of a bottleneck at some point in this sign-up process at local FSA offices?
The short answer in West Texas, I can tell you, is an absolute yes, because we have a county seat where we're dealing with about 350,000 acres of irrigated land and another 300,000 acres of dry land, and we're down to three ladies in that office, and I know they are extremely overworked as it is. And when you go south of me, they're not only dealing with a county that's 45 miles by 30, but they're also dealing with Reeves County, which is about the size of Rhode Island. And so you're dealing with a lot of pressure there, and I would hope that there would be some way that they can at least get temporary help, because so much of this farm bill, as all of y'all know, because y'all are in, you cover this, is based on county yields. And so much of that safety net is based on getting these county yields right. And I see that as probably the biggest time-consuming thing that these officers are going to have to deal with, because if you don't get those numbers right, then the safety net can be a hammock or it can be nothing. And so we've got to make sure that they've got adequate staffing, adequate support. I mean, and all of this doesn't have to come right from the local area. There's NAS, there's RMA, there's other sources that can help them. But we've really got to, we've got to send the message to Congress and stuff that it's important to get this implemented right and to get the staffing and get the ability there to get these deals right, or quite frankly, it's going to be a mess.
I just like to add that it is going to be critical. This bill, the great part of it is it does give farmers choice, that you're able to tailor this bill to your farm, and you may choose PLC for one crop and ARC for another crop, and it's going to give, like I said, give growers a choice. But when it comes to implementation, that's going to be really difficult. It's going to be a whole new process for our county offices. It's going to be complicated for farmers to understand what their choices are, and it will be a real challenge for the FSA offices to deal with, and so it is a big concern.
Yeah, and those tools that our universities are developing, for farmers to make better decisions will be helpful in streamlining the process. But, there is going to be a lot of decisions to make and a lot of paperwork, I think, to do at our local offices.
You see him? I get a question. Talking with a major ag business lender, he's concerned that government policy is so much a part of biodiesel that he's concerned about lending businesses that are not sold on cellulosic ethanol or biodiesel to that entire industry. And the best recommendation he gave is that it might be okay, which isn't a high recommendation for getting capital. So can you address getting capital for these businesses that make biodiesel? Are there concerns there?
Yeah. Well, as we talked about, the message from EPA really discourages innovation, is what we've shared with them. And, our industry, our biodiesel industry needs that certainty to expand and really meet the demand and the needs that are out there. But on the other side, there are a lot of state programs that encourage the use of biodiesel and will help with, encouraging that use and increasing that demand. And, biodiesel is a really good product, and we use it on our farm all the time, and we're very happy with it. Last fall, when we filled up with biodiesel, our 5B5 was 5 cents a gallon cheaper than number two diesel. So, there's some advantages there, and it creates – it creates demand for soybeans. It helps the economy, and we just need to continue to share that message with EPA and our legislators to put as much pressure as we can on the EPA to give us a favorable response.
Thank you for sure.
When your crop is in the Georgia, you have to figure out which program that you're going to choose for your pension.
Yes. there are multiple questions, and the devil's in the details of any of these things, and quite frankly, I can go back to the 08 Farm Bill, and we never had a choice in our office because lady that I've known since I was a little kid still works in there, and when I went in there, she said, "Wade, you will sign up for this program." And I said, "But what about?" She said, "You'll sign up for this one." So it might, but yes, it's going to be a very difficult thing, and it's a big learning curve for those of us that are especially in the Southwest, because we're going to have to learn how to deal with these generic bases where we had cotton base. And so it's going to make it time-consuming. And my fear is that your banker, your financial institution, may be the one that comes down and makes your decision for you instead of the market. And that would be the biggest fear I have in determining your planting mix. I'd hate to see anything more than the majority of farmers go in and your banker says, well, you're going to plant this year. And so it's going to make it very difficult. I think that it's possible, and we're going to, fear the unknown. It makes me say yes automatically, but, my hope is that the implementation is such that it makes it manageable and that we can grow what we need to, what the market tells us we need. Because I'm very big on you need to grow what is actually needed. There's nothing crazier than putting limited resources into a crop that you're selling below the cost of production. And so I hope that we're just free to plant what we know the market needs and what the people demand.
Randy Cohen, River River Farm Network. EPA just issued some proposed rules for farm chemical safety. Are there any concerns there, especially when it comes down to how they word overspraying fumes?
Yeah. So we continue to work with EPA and share our concerns and work with our legislators, about the NPDES, and how it affects farmers and making sure that not only in Washington, D.C., but our regional administrators, know farmers' needs and understand, how farmers work and operate, and that we do know how to use our products and that we can do that, use them in a safe and judicious manner.